welcome to So No Kids, the podcast designed by women without kids for people that get it. Today we're talking to Hannah about growing up in the Middle East, finding fulfillment in different life paths, and how to perfect the journey from maiden to crone. Hello, Hannah. How's it going?
Hello, Joe. It's going well. Thank you so much for having me.
So how did you come to be a woman without kids?
Does that include my furry babies?
Furry babies, they can be a sub-heading within this
Definitely within this the conversation. Yeah, for sure. I mean, to be honest, I don't know whether or not I could have kids. I have never tried. I've practiced, you know. I was born in Abu Dhabi and lived in the Middle East till I was 18. And I would say it's quite a different upbringing from if you're living in the Western world. So we didn't have like sex education at school. It was quite sort of, well, it's hugely frowned upon if you got pregnant. Like I remember a girl at school getting pregnant at 14 and having to be deported. And I think my mum sort of instilled from a very young age, like, whatever you do, do not get pregnant. And yeah, I don't know if that has that much to do with it, but I just thought I'd start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always been a bit of a tomboy. That's what you called it back in the day. I, you know, played rugby. I then had a lesbian relationship for 4 years. And I've just never been able to see myself as a mother, I think, to be honest. And then I moved to London, lived there for maybe about 12 years. And I was working in the music industry, but also touring with bands and never had any money. And even though I had quite steady relationships, I just never really, I don't think it was even an option, or I wasn't even a thought, if I'm honest. I mean, you know, you guys know what London's like. London is just, it's hand to mouth, isn't it? Like, well, for a lot of the time, it definitely was. Yeah, and then I moved to Bristol. I got together with my now husband, Ross, but we were bandmates for many, many years and worked together and finally just saw the sense. We're like, oh, actually, this would be good. And like, despite having like a perfect, loving relationship where it's always a possibility, if I wanted to, neither of us are particularly, I just can't see it. Do you know what I mean? If you can't picture it, you can't really, if you can't imagine it, it just doesn't seem to make sense. And we're composers. And the first few documentaries we worked on were all about climate change. Quite depressing. And it just sort of compounded the fact that, oh, the insecurity and instability of the thought of bringing any life into where we just have no idea what the climate's going to be like in the next few years. I know this sounds very depressing, sorry.
No, it does. It does play on your mind. Sometimes I think about, on the reverse, if I did have children, how much that would worry me. And it does take a pressure out, making a decision and living for a moment rather than having to think too far ahead into futures beyond us from a perspective of worrying about your your flesh and blood.
Exactly. I mean, I have a brother and a sister, younger brother and sister, and they've both had kids. My sister's got a boy and a girl, and my brother has three girls. Two of them are twins. Absolute chaos.
Amazing.
It is amazing. And to be honest, like, I kind of felt by the time they had them, I had my fill, if you know what I mean. Like, mm-hmm. They've almost had my quota. And at the same time, I get to be like the best auntie in the world, obviously. I'm sorry, that's what my sister said when I messaged her earlier. She's like...
When did you and your partner sort of talk about it, and how did that discussion go?
So I would say that Ross is a bit of a, let's say, nihilist. Mm-hmm. And we're quite well suited. So we've been together for like 10 years now-ish. As I was approaching my late 30s, despite never really having any desire at all to have kids, I then, you know, everyone talks about you, this biological clock and all that, what a load of bollocks that is. But there is, like, hormones are fucking powerful things. And I did find myself like contemplating and going, shit, like, this is my only, like, last few years I probably could conceive if I tried, maybe, possibly. So we had the conversation, we joked about it, we've sort of put a date at one point into the diary saying, oh, like, I'll make babies, after a very drunken conversation and quite weepy from my side. I found it quite difficult to compute because of not really ever wanting to be a mother before. And then suddenly it was like, what is going on here? What are these emotions, if you know what I mean? But then it seemed to pass.
So you did have a moment of feeling, of noticing those hormones impacting your feelings.
Definitely for the past few years, but only at a very specific time of the month. Mm. And I'm like, shit. And then I'm like, well, goodness, who the fuck was that? And then it goes away. And it seems to be becoming less and less, I would say. Even if my logical brain would allow it, if you know what I mean. I know there's always, people always say, oh, you'd find money, you'd find a way to do it if you really wanted to or if it happened. But I'm like, what, why? Like, you know what I mean? That sounds really insensitive, but.
I'm so glad you said that, because I've had that, I would say, probably for the last couple of years, maybe a year, where you have a couple of days a month where you sort of think to yourself, oh, actually, I could get pregnant. I could have a baby. And then the rest of the month, you're thinking, what on earth was that? Like, what was that thought process? You're the first person to say that to me. And, that makes me feel a lot more normal, she says, air quotes. But that's super interesting how also your brain then goes, that's completely crazy. Where were you those 2 days?
Exactly. I think that's the strangest thing, is feeling like you're somebody else for a few days.
Yes.
Like, genuinely a different human being. And maybe it doesn't make us more normal. Maybe it makes us really special.
Maybe it does. Yeah, very special. And there's at least two of us, Hannah, now.
Exactly. Some out there in the world.
I've definitely had like broody moments, but they've been, I could probably count them on one hand for like my whole life. And I think last year they did kind of reach a bit of a crescendo, to the point where I was like, maybe we should just try and see what happens.
Or not try to stop it. And just,
yeah,
if it happens, it happens.
But we'll, I mean, because I've
go with the flow.
I've got a coil for my contraception. So it would actually really involve me going to the doctor, saying I want to do, there are so many steps to.
It's a much more conscious decision. Like, I don't really, you just sort of use a rhythm method. So I don't, like, it wouldn't be such a big deal, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not such a big decision. But even then, like, yeah, sort of having to go in to have a coil removed, that's like, that's commitment, isn't it?
Yes, it was committing to something that I never thought I'd want, I'd wanted. And I just, in the end, didn't do it, and then rode around with those feelings to kind of come full circle and make the final decision that, for me, I was kind of sticking to the guns of what I'd spent my entire life telling everyone, which was that I don't want kids. I don't think any of us would be women if we hadn't have felt the shifts in hormones and had those moments of kind of questioning that or feeling something else.
Exactly. And I think there's also that you're still a woman regardless of whether you can or have had children. I think, like, it's very, very important to remember that it is something sacred. We were once worshipped like the earth.
And also, it's okay for your logical brain in the larger part of your life to be like, no, I know that I don't want children. It's not for me. And then have those feelings of, oh, you know, maybe I could conceive, you know, maybe I just give that a go. And that's
such a luxury, isn't it? If you think,
isn't it really?
The luxury to go, I could if I wanted to, but actually I've got more exciting things going on in my life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have that lie-in in the morning and choose my own schedule and continue to create music and not just become a vessel for another being. And I know that sounds really hollow and shallow, and I look at my sister and my brother, and like, they're amazing parents, and I love my nieces and my nephew so much, and I can see what it's brought to their lives, but I just cannot picture it. And I think what you're doing is so, so helpful to the small group of us approaching menopause, I suppose, or perimenopause, to sort of support each other and feel like it's still valid, even though everybody on Facebook is posting pictures of children.
Have you got lots of friends that are parents, lots of non-parents?
Since moving to Donegal, we sort of gravitated towards a group of people, probably between mid-30s to probably even 70s. Some of them have children, some of them don't, but a lot of our closest ones don't have kids and are roughly our age. It's almost like you sort of gravitate towards a sort of slightly rebellious, party-loving crew of artists and bonkers people that don't necessarily fit the norm, if you know what I mean. You know, it's like, oh, do you want to go camping on a Monday on the beach? And fuck it, why not? Let's have a bonfire. And there's no like, oh no, I can't. I've got to take the kids to football practice or get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to take them to school. Or can I just apologize? I've got stereo dog snores at the moment. They're both sitting on the sofa behind me and they're terriers. So they've just got this like going on. Sorry.
Don't worry.
No worries at all. I think that's it. It's like when you embrace like, okay, we're not going to go down that particular convention, and you decide to do with that whatever. So like the example you've just given, like, okay, fuck it, we're all going camping on a Monday. That it feels like the best kind of meaning you can give to the decision, almost like to just go and live in the most fun and unexpected ways that you wouldn't be able to if you'd done the other.
Exactly. And I'm sure I can imagine how gratifying it is to be a parent. Like, I've got two lovely ladies here who have become very close female friends. And I say female friends because I've had very few female friends in my life. For some reason, I just end up hanging out with the boys all the time. Every week or so, we gather together and we just sing in like close harmony. One of them has a baby, gorgeous little thing. And she's been coming to the singing practice since, you know, she was breastfeeding and, you know, we'd be by the fire. It's all very sort of wholesome and kind of female empowering vibes. But yeah, so I can see the joy. But at the same time, I also see all the stress and the trauma and like insecurity and anxiety and everything else that goes with it, because you're actually close enough to witness it, if you know what I mean. And I'm not sure necessarily if there's all the support within society at the moment.
Yeah.
In some ways, I almost feel a bit protected.
It's almost like we're too informed now. There's so many articles talking about how difficult motherhood is. There's so many Instagram accounts either making it look like this sort of perfect traditional aesthetic or this kind of mental hellhole. And
yeah,
we've just got all this information that's made it so much more difficult to just go, fuck it, let's give it a go and see what happens. And it's interesting because you go back to your upbringing, where it sounds like there almost wasn't very much information with regards to sort of sex education and things like that.
Oh, there wasn't genuinely. I had my first orgasm. I didn't know what it was. I was like, what the fuck was that? That felt great. And then I couldn't stop. The lack of knowledge made the whole thing even more scary in some ways. And now the overflowing amount of knowledge still puts me off.
If you get to see with friends and peers all of the bad stuff and you don't see any of the good stuff, or vice versa,
if you only see them sort of panicking in a public place because you've had a punami or whatever, and you just I'm forgetting the like really nice cuddles you had in the morning. It's the same way, I suppose, with any relationship, even between a couple. Like, you know, no one really knows what goes on apart from the two people in the relationship, I suppose. What is quite grounding is just sort of feeling like you're making the decision, appreciating all the other stuff you've got in your life and not feeling like that you haven't completed something.
Yeah, putting it to one side almost, isn't it? It's this thing that can kind of keep going, if you were going to do it, you need to do it now. And just putting it to one side and saying, I'm not doing that. Let's focus on everything else.
Exactly. And embracing your sort of like crazy witch dog woman with a walking stick shouting at neighbour children.
Oh my God, all day. I love that so much. That's literally like, I want to be the crone.
And
I'm getting there.
Doing like early crone entry. You skip the mother part. You go maiden crone.
Definitely. I'm going straight into the crone era. And like, I'm going to call the dog a familiar, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, even just like a how-to, you know? Wiki how for maiden to crone.
Absolutely. I would say get yourself a garden.
Yes.
That's the first one. Grow, have lots of plant babies. Plant babies are incredibly satisfying. You get to watch them to grow and then you eat them, which is even better. Furry babies as well. Thoroughly recommended. Brew your own beer. That's a good fast track to.
Yeah,
that's
a good one.
Cauldron, always needed.
Yeah.
For those sort of activities. Lots of fermenting of foods, you know, hobbies. It's a bizarre thing you realize when you haven't got kids, I think. You've just got time to get obsessed with other things.
What do you love about your life?
I feel I've been very lucky in a lot of ways. I've got an amazing partner and workmate and lover that, like, I realise is a rarity in life. Absolutely love my dogs. I love my family. I'm very close to them, even if I'm not geographically very close to them. I absolutely love my garden. I loved my greenhouse before it literally blew away last storm. I love writing. I love creating. I love being outdoors. I love the fact that we're by the sea and I can just swim. I absolutely love the beach. I love cooking. I love baking. I love fermenting food. I love brewing. I love making wreaths at Christmas. We've got this weird ritual that I make a wreath every Christmas and post one to Ross's family, and then on New Year's we burn them. There's some sort of strange new ritual. I suppose I love ritual in a weird way, but your own ones that you make up. Yeah, I think I love nature. I'm obsessed with. We've built a pond recently, for instance, and we've got a load of tadpoles in it. On a daily basis, I love having the time that I can just go and literally watch pond TV and just stare at the little diving beetles and the slugs and the snails and the tadpoles and just watching whirligigs. And like, it's just like, you know, there's so much there that life has to offer that isn't procreating.
Absolutely. Just got to have the time to find it.
Yeah. And I suppose the ability to appreciate it without being forced to feel that you're not fulfilling your role. You know what I mean? You could have many different roles in life. You could be an auntie. You could be a crone. You could be a dog mum. You know, I think once you accept that, then that's a path to happiness, most definitely.
That is such a beautiful note for us to end this interview on. I can't tell you how much it resonates with me. I wholeheartedly agree, Hannah, and thank you.
I went on about my pond so much. I can't tell you how excited I am about it, though, genuinely. It's become my new favourite thing, pond watch in the morning, feed the birds.
Yes, I'm in the middle of, like, doing my garden, and, like, I looked at a picture of my garden the other day and was like, it looks, you know, like, I think to anyone, if I showed them this, like, they'd be like, yep, that's a garden. But, like, for me, it's just, I can just stare at it all day and get so much joy out of watching that grow and fixating over what to do with it next. That I completely get that.
Absolutely. And I think when you just, I mean, it's such a cliche to stop and smell the flowers, but like, we got bought a load of apple trees and fruit trees. But when we got married, all our neighbors just decided to give us trees, which I thought was so sweet. and just going around like sniffing all the blossom, the cherry blossom and the apple blossom. I'm like, oh God, so good. Spring, you're finally here. But like, yeah, to stop and smell the flowers, I think having the time and the luxury to do that is unique to us.
Thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was so lovely to catch up. Honestly, I love what you're doing. It's such a fucking cool idea.
I think what Hannah said about there being so much that life has to offer that isn't procreating was just such a lovely note to end on. And also the appreciation for nature.
I noticed how quiet it went when she started talking about the frog spawn. And I thought, when I was listening to it, thinking, oh, no one's saying anything. Like a contemplative moment, it felt like.
Yeah, it's a different way of growing things and seeing things change over time. And I guess there is some sort of like maternal kick that you're getting from watching nature grow and change and evolve.
And you can't control it. Like you can't control, it's like with plants, isn't it? The amount of effort you can put into plants and they still die. And actually some of the best, most successful plants are the ones that are left alone to get on with it themselves.
Probably not applicable to parenting, but yes.
Good job we've only got the plants.
So this is our last episode of this series, and it's been pretty amazing. Like the response has been great. We really have appreciated everyone taking the time and listening to us waffle on and make mistakes in front of everyone, and yeah, just getting involved and giving us feedback in all the chats we've been having.
So when we put the initial call out to find guests for the first season of the podcast, a lot of people who came back to us have made the choice not to have children, and for one reason or another. And that's meant that maybe we didn't get as many different voices as we maybe would have liked.
And I think looking forward, we do just want to make sure that we're covering the different ways of seeing this, ways of feeling about it, including more women who have not been able to have children who would be willing to talk to us. And I think the other thing worth saying is that we focus on women as a starting point, and I think we thought we were going to be quite a niche thing. But one of the unexpectedly lovely things about this podcast is not only how many people who have children have related to the things being discussed and a lot of the feelings that have been expressed, but also how many men and non-binary people have also showed an interest. And I think we certainly never wanted to exclude anyone, which is why you may have noticed at the beginning of this episode, we've changed our tagline to by women without kids for people that get it. And reflecting that, we'd definitely be interested in opening up the discussion to men and non-binary people moving forward, as well as women, because this is obviously something that there are a lot of similar feelings and a lot of different scenarios, which would be interesting for us all to hear. Is there anything else, Lou, that you think you'd like to sort of mention before we wrap up this series?
I wanted to mention a couple of the different themes that seem to come up quite frequently from the different people that we talk about. So a lot of people who have come on have talked about, either in detail or not in that much detail, about their childhoods. So whether those childhoods were kind of full of anxiety, might have involved bullying, might have involved difficulties with their parents or difficult relationships with their parents into adulthood. That's definitely something that seems to be coming up from the people that we've spoken to. And this isn't to say that this is everybody's experience if you are a child-free person, but I think it's worth just spending a bit of time contemplating that, really.
And yeah, it makes sense if childhood wasn't the happiest time in your life, then maybe the idea around creating children is slightly more complex.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I think
one of the other things that kind of came up a little bit was around motherhood feeling a little bit like a thankless task. Mm-hmm. And that lack of support maybe within the community, perhaps family, workplace, even partner, as Sammy kind of touched on, and how that affects this situation quite drastically.
You can't have a child with a child. That line has been quoted back to me on more than one occasion after the Sammy app came out.
T-shirts incoming. T-shirts
indeed. And yeah, the overall benefit of having kids when you're living in a society where actually you might not have much support from your family or from the systems that surround you, or as you said, like the workplace, like it can be difficult if it's not something that's kind of an innate, I desperately want to have children, can be difficult to see what the benefit could be.
100%, especially if you don't have a steady partner, or if, you know, you're not in a financial situation that that feels reasonable to do. But yeah, it's been an amazing experience. We've really, really enjoyed not only talking to the incredible women who trusted us to interview them, to edit them and give us their stories, but also to everyone that's reached out, be that on Instagram or email or any other means, just to tell us where they've related or and where people have spoke directly to their experience or fascinated them with a completely different viewpoint. So thank you to everyone that's listened to this. And we do hope to be back with a second series.
Just on that point of the second season. So if you are interested in talking to us about your life, your child-free existence, what led you to be there, anything that you feel that would be worth other people hearing or something that you want to share, please email us at sonokids@mail.com.
Yeah, it would be great to hear from you. Thank you. And no doubt you shall hear us again soon.
Bye, everyone.
Sono Kids is created by Joe Ridley and Louise Cotton, with production support from Claire Amasami, sound assistance from Ross Flight and Rich Martin, audio mastering by Edie Martin, and music by Stephen Pack.
If you've enjoyed listening to this, give us a follow, give us a rating, share with your friends. It all helps.